Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 19th, 2014. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Main Street Rogers is hosting Third Friday tomorrow evening from 5 to 8 p.m. in Frisco Park at First and Elm in downtown Rogers. Events include Taste of Summer, featuring cheese, wine, and beer, with Jomo Jazz live on the Frisco stage. Downtown stores and restaurants will be open for business. MainStreetRogers.com or 936-5487 for more information.
Coming up on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a visit to a jeweler's studio where she makes trinkets of beauty using stones, sterling silver, and words on metal. Plus, we'll talk with Matt Campbell of the Blue Hog Report about how the lawyer-turned-journalist uncovers and covers political happenings in the state.
But first, Arkansas earned an overall ranking of 40th in a study released this morning by AARP, ranking long-term services and support for older people. The state scored in the bottom quarter of states for each category assessed. AARP Associate Director for Arkansas, Herb Sanderson, says the need is expected to grow.
We're on the front end of the aging 80-plus baby boomers, and our state's aging population is going to increase by 40% by 2030. And the current system is just unsustainable.
Arkansas AARP has received a $67 million grant from the federal government, which Sanderson says he hopes can transform the system. Dr. Susan C. Reinhard, also with AARP, stressed the disparity between the states.
States that are very high performing minimize disruptive transitions between hospitals and homes and nursing homes, that they can successfully return home.
The report released this morning is an update from AARP's first scorecard, released in 2011.
Organizers at the Arkansas Air and Military Museum at Fayetteville's Drake Field hope Saturday will be a busy day when the museum hosts the first airport days. Russ Smith, one of the museum's board members and a pilot who flies out of Drake Field, says the reason for holding airport days is simple.
The museum is struggling financially since Interstate 49 opened and the road traffic going by on 71 dramatically decreased. So in effort to increase awareness, we're going to have airport days on the third Saturday of every month through the summer, and if it's successful, we'll continue doing it on into perpetuity as long as there's an interest.
Smith says for the normal price of admission to the Arkansas Air and Military Museum, attendees will be treated to a pancake breakfast in the morning, hamburgers in the afternoon, and guided tours of the museum's exhibits.
The stuff that we have is really pretty amazing. We've got a lot of Golden Age vintage aircraft from the 20s and 30s. There's a couple of racers here that are really unique. One of them was flown by Jimmy Doolittle, and another one flown by Poncho Barnes, who's famous for opening the restaurant at Edwards Air Force Base that was featured in the movie The Right Stuff.
Smith says without funding for advertising on a similar level to what other area museums have, not many people know about the Air Museum, and events like Airport Days are an effort to change that.
The city of Siloam Springs has canceled the grand opening of the new Whitewater Recreation Park. The change was reportedly out of respect for the family of 16-year-old Evan Thomas, who drowned at the park Tuesday and was identified by officials yesterday.
Construction is beginning today in Fayetteville on widening a portion of Razorback Road. According to the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department, crews will begin widening the existing roadway to four lanes from Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard to just north of Nettleship Drive. Expansion work will also include installing new storm sewers, constructing curb and gutter sidewalks, and a new asphalt overlay. The project also includes the installation of a traffic signal and an additional turn lane at Razorback and Leroy Pond Drive. The $2.2 million project is expected to be completed by next spring.
The Vice Provost for Distance Education at the University of Arkansas has been appointed to the Board of Directors for the University Professional and Continuing Education Association. Javier Reyes heads the U of A Global Campus and is an economics professor. He will fill an unexpired term on the board through March of next year. The association was founded in 1915 and serves as a link between adult learners and public policy issues, and is a national association for professional, continuing, and online education that serves about 400 institutions.
The Walton Arts Center has changed this weekend's scheduled performance by Ron White. He was originally scheduled to perform Friday and Saturday at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The two performances are now one, Saturday night at 8 at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. Singer-songwriter Margot Ray is also scheduled to perform Saturday, directly following White's performance. Aaron Rogers, the interim communications manager for Walton Arts Center, says while construction work in Baum Walker Hall wasn't intended to begin until next summer, the first phase of construction has been moved up to this summer.
What had happened is it was scheduled to begin in the summer of 2015, and when the contractors had come in to start planning for that, they had decided that it needed to be accelerated, and so to ensure that work was going to be completed in time for our 2014 and 15 season, which starts in early September, we needed to begin immediately.
Specifically, crews will be performing structural work on the steel trusses in Baum Walker Hall. Rogers says the work should be completed in time for this year's Fayetteville Roots Festival in August.
Expect mostly cloudy skies this evening with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas. A 50% chance in the Arkansas River Valley with overnight lows around 71. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas. A 40% chance in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs from 86 to 91. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers. Lows around 70.
This is Ozarks at Large. Connections between the Trail of Tears and Northwest Arkansas run deep. According to the Encyclopedia of Arkansas, most of the 13 detachments of Cherokees forced to leave their homes because of the Federal Indian Removal Act of 1830 traveled a route that included a stretch from Pea Ridge to Cane Hill, then into present-day Oklahoma. This busy intersection of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and Stadium Drive has changed since 1839. That's when thousands of Cherokee Indians passed by. Still, hidden just a few hundred yards away from the traffic light is a park where many of the people forced across the country camped. The Trail of Tears Park is just behind the University of Arkansas soccer field. There is a decades-old plaque signifying the park's place in history and a somber three-stone monument representing the people who, along the trail, stopped here. Yesterday, some of the descendants of those forced to march across the land were also in the small park. Nearly two dozen bicyclists have been riding the Trail of Tears this spring as part of the Remember the Removal ride. Earlier in the day, the riders had stopped at Fitzgerald Station in Springdale, where some of the detachments in 1839 had stayed overnight. Sean Tuton, a Cherokee Nation citizen and professor in the University of Arkansas English Department, welcomed the riders to their latest stop in Fayetteville.
Right under our feet here is a camp spot for one of the detachments on the Trail of Tears, and I'm sure some of our ancestors may have camped here, and it's a very moving moment. I have to say, when I saw your cars come rolling in here, I felt myself kind of choke up. I didn't think that would happen, but I guess what I'm realizing is that we still persist. We're here. And it's such a proud moment. And all of you have traveled nearly 1,000 miles to do this. You young people, students who want to learn so much. And I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful moment. So, Wado, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Jerry Hogan with the Washington County Historical Society briefly explained some of the Cherokee history intertwined with Fayetteville in northwest Arkansas, and Fayetteville City Council member Rhonda Adams officially welcomed the riders. The trip has merged riders from the Eastern Band, descendants of those who avoided relocation, and members of the Western Cherokee, who are descendants of people forced to march. Joseph Erb, the coordinator for the Remember the Removal Ride of 2014, says the bicycle caravan has already covered more than 900 miles by the end of the day yesterday.
And so we started in northern Georgia at New Echota, and that was their original capital. And we started riding there with the Eastern Band of Cherokees. And so we combined the two groups and have been riding for almost 3 weeks now.
What have the stops, the overnights, what have those been like?
So it's, you ride all day. And then when you stop at night, we stop during the day at certain locations, and we stop at night in different locations. For example, we slept out in Red Clay in the Blue Hole, which was like kind of a sacred place for us. And they let us swim in it because we were Cherokee. Normally they don't let people in, and it's quite cold water. And we get to see special sites where our ancestors were. After we get out of Blythe's Ferry, it's kind of a sad journey after that, because we only see grave sites and springs at that point. So places they stopped and places they died. And so since we left our original homeland on this trip, you know, we've seen grave sites and campsites. And that kind of gets to you. They did genealogy of every member of the group. And so we know where our families crossed. We know which families are related to. Some of our troop are related to Sequoia, some the Van family, some commissioners, signers of the constitutions. All of the participants that are riding and all of the staff are descendants of people that went along the trail. And so we're kind of experienced what our ancestors experienced.
Yeah, imagine as hard as it is to travel over so far 900 miles, what keeps coming back is how horrible it was.
You know, I produced a film for the National Park Service about this, and I kind of thought I knew what the Trail of Tears was, you know, working on it for years, but I really never knew how hard, how far, and how long this journey is going to be. And we're on bicycles in the warm days, and they were in winter with ill-prepared situations. It's a long journey, and it's hard, even to this day. And we saw every mile. And it's difficult to see that, and it gives you pride though, because you're like, they survived so we could continue.
What have the conversations been like with the riders? I mean, is there been talk after you've seen some of these sites?
Yeah, so you know, it's very moving, and it hits us all at different times. You know, sometimes we're having a good day, and like you're enjoying that you're out together as Cherokee people, and other days it's really rough. Other days it can be tough when we go out there, because it's. We'll just pass a grave and one of our riders are related to the person that died there. And that can be tough too, because you're journeying along and you're learning about each other. The Eastern Band and us, we didn't know each other. Many of the people that we're riding with, we've met just in the last few months on our training rides and our history courses that we take. And you get to know and get close, you know, other families. Most of us are related to each other through genealogy. We're like, oh, this is my third cousin, that's my fourth cousin. One of our riders is related to 12 different riders. So we're all connected in some ways, and so we're kind of learning about each other and about the trail.
Finally, you have Trail of Tears Memorial right on the trailer, on your shirt. Have you had a chance to educate some people who maybe have heard of Trail of Tears but don't really know what it was?
Yeah, a lot of people don't really understand what happened during the trail. A lot of times they thought, well, they just made an agreement and they left or something like that, but they weren't really happy about it. They don't realize that Cherokees wanted the Supreme Court not to be removed. And so for this, on our jerseys, you'll see that we have syllabary on it, which is our writing system, and it's from the Rosses Scroll. And when we wanted the Supreme Court not to be removed, over 90% of the tribe signed this piece of paper that they sewed together called the Rosses Scroll that said, we don't want to move. And this is part of our jersey, that these are the names of our ancestors here saying they didn't want to move. So when we ride, you know, we think about that. Like, we're looking at each other in our uniforms as we ride, and these are the names of the people that said we don't want to go. And we educate people along the way about our tribe, about our clan system, which is on there, the star that represents the people we lost on the trail, that it's still such a magnitude to our nation as a people, that on our regular flag, there's a black star that represents the Trail of Tears that we lost people on. And that little black star is the people that didn't make it. And so it's even on our flag about how big of an event this was to our people.
You're almost done with this ride now.
We are. You know, it's kind of a different situation for the Cherokee Nation citizens here, that we're going back home. You know, we've made this home for 170 years. But the Eastern Band are finishing the ride very far from home. And so we have this little different experience in the next couple of days as we get closer. We're getting closer to our families, and they're still far from theirs.
Joseph Erb is the coordinator for the Remember the Removal 2014 bike ride, commemorating the forced removal of Cherokees from their homeland. The riders are scheduled to finish their nearly 1,000-mile ride in downtown Tahlequah today. In all, the forced removal of Native Americans in the 1830s involved 5 tribes. Historians' estimates on how many Cherokee people died in the forced removal vary widely, from at least 2,000 people to as many as 6,000 deaths. This is Ozarks at Large.
Coming up in the second half hour of Ozarks at Large, using words, pictures, and materials as inspiration to work metal into works of wearable art.
The stone reminded me a lot of, it's a blue lace agate, and it reminded me a lot of water and of waves. So the fish is on the back, and the little dots are sort of representative of bubbles. So I get, sometimes I just start in on a piece and the ideas come as I'm working. A lot of times I have no plan.
We visit the Bentonville studio of InDesigns coming up on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson, and that is not Frankie Valli. It's actor John Lloyd Young who plays Valli in the film adaptation of the Broadway musical Jersey Boys. John Lloyd Young, next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Can you come out
tonight? Here and Now could be heard just after Ozarks at Large at 1 p.m. on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnes.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
There's a new company of theater players coming to town. The new group is calling themselves the Crude Mechanicals, and they'll make their debut June 29th at Gully Park in Fayetteville with their version of the Shakespeare classic Romeo and Juliet. The company is made up of actors Kiefer Dean Roach, Haley Zaga, Carrie George, Zach Stoltz, and Chris Jordan. All are current students or recent theater graduates from the University of Arkansas and Pace University in New York City. The group was founded on the idea that anyone should have the opportunity to experience the magic of Shakespeare without ticket cost being a barrier to access. Along those lines, the company plans to make all of their shows available to the public free of charge. After the debut performance, June 29th, future performances are scheduled on July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 8th, and 9th. All of these shows will begin at 7 p.m. at the gazebo at Gully Park in Fayetteville. For more information, visit the Crude Mechanicals Facebook page.
I love everything about that, that you can just go to Gully Park and see Romeo and Juliet.
I just walked around it yesterday. It's a beautiful place.
Can you imagine if you were just walking around and, hey,
happened upon,
they're the Capulets and Montagues.
Yeah.
And this evening, Cocktails for a Cause is celebrating Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge and the work they do. This takes place at the Cat House Lounge and Pied Piper Pub in downtown Eureka. Tickets are $10 at the door. 33% of proceeds during the two-hour event are split between the Eureka Springs Downtown Network and Turpentine Creek. The event is in partnership with the Carroll County Community Foundation Future Fund, Arvest Bank, Booking.com, and Main Street Eureka Springs Downtown Network.
Cocktails for a Cause. I like that.
Okay. So far we got Romeo and Juliet. We got cocktails. We're 2 for 2.
I also like comedy. There's a comedy showcase presented by the Comedians of Northwest Arkansas. It will take place tomorrow evening at Mermaid's Restaurant in Fayetteville. Zach Biondi, Brittany Ann Daniels, Jesse Wells, and Kevin Byram will perform along with their MC, Rogers Hack.
Roger. He's just Roger, I think.
Oh. Will perform with their MC, Roger Hawk. Doors open at 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. Show begins at 8, and general admission is $5.
You can take part in a solstice celebration that takes place around James Turrell's Sky Space installation at Crystal Bridges. That is on June 21st, of course, first day of summer. Walton Arts Center's The Way of Timber, a site-specific musical performance composed especially for the Sky Space and designed by renowned and sound artist Steve Parker of Sound Space, will be performed using didgeridoos, trombones, and sine waves. The composition is a sonic interpretation of the Sky Space experience. It begins at sunset. Didgeridoos. Still have not had them in Furman Garner Performance Studio.
We need to get it in.
Yeah, we do.
On that one. Registration is still open for the third annual True Grit Ride 100 and the inaugural True Grit Mountain Bike Ride. The Community Services Clearinghouse Guild is hosting this third annual True Grit Ride this Saturday at Ben Garin Park. It's scheduled to begin at 7 a.m. at that park in Fort Smith. The ride includes 10, 35, 50, 75, and the True Grit 100-mile routes. Chuck Wagon aid stations are roughly 10 miles apart. New to the True Grit ride this year is a mountain bike ride beginning at 7 a.m. at Ben Garin Park, and riders will venture over to Spring Hill Park before returning to the finish line back at Ben Garin. The mountain bike ride includes 18, 40, and 50-mile courses with Chuck Wagon aid stations for your convenience. Registration for both the road and mountain biking is $40. For more information, truegritride.com.
Now, all of those and more things happening in the next few days, but we're going to give you a chance to experience even more on our dime.
Right, and whenever you like.
That's right. Right.
We have 4 Malco movie tickets to give away.
Good for any Malco movie theater in our area.
4 tickets to any Naturals baseball game.
You just take these vouchers, you exchange them at Will Call, and they give you the best seats available for that particular game.
And then we have a pair, so 2 tickets, to any performance of opera in the Ozarks. Opening night for that is tomorrow evening, actually.
Right, and you can pick whether you want Mozart, Puccini, or Sondheim, and you can pick the day. We'll just tell you who to call, and you leave it up. So, we're going to give away 2 of these packages.
Right.
Each package contains 4 movie passes, 4 baseball ticket vouchers, and 2 Opera in the Ozark tickets.
And all you have to do to enter your name into this drawing is email us.
At ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
All right, there you go.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Blue Hog Report, a blog produced by Matt Campbell in Little Rock, has had quite the influence on Arkansas this political season. It was the Blue Hog Report that first reported on expense report problems for former Lieutenant Governor and one-time congressional candidate Mark Dar. Dar later dropped out of the race for Congress and then later resigned his post as Lieutenant Governor. Other elected and appointed officials have been the focus of Matt Campbell's work. I'm happy to say that Matt Campbell is in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where did the Blue Hog Report start?
I sort of fell kind of backward into where it is now. It started off just as a way to be involved in the 2010 races, kind of on a local level. I was interested in the 2nd district race. You know, that was when Vic Snyder retired, so there was a 5-person primary on the Democrat side. And then when the election was over, I sort of had to figure out what I wanted to do with it when there weren't daily breaking political stories, and I'd done some sort of research work on some of the Mark Martin stuff in that race against Pat O'Brien and enjoyed it. And
that was for Secretary of State?
Correct, yeah. And then I just kept kind of doing some FOIA requests and poking around, and it sort of became the niche, and it was easier to do that and work it around my work schedule, you know, and do, you know, a story every few days instead of trying to kind of have this breaking news as the days went along.
And you mentioned your work schedule. You're an attorney.
Yes. Yeah. I was originally, I was with the Supreme Court when I started the blog. And then May 2013, I went out on my own, started my own firm.
What was your undergraduate degree in?
Business and accounting.
So you did not study to get into journalism?
Nope, not at all. I guess I credit law school as far as the sort of investigative part and the writing component. And then it's that business and accounting undergrad degree that sort of, I guess, makes me gravitate toward the money trail instead of some of the, you know, personal rumors as much as possible.
How does something get on your radar? How do you say, okay, I'm going to look into these campaign reports of Mark Dar?
It's really random. The blog was shut down from June 2011 until May of 2013. And then since it's come back, I've had a lot more people who have sort of followed, and I'll get a lot of tips, but 90% of those are, you know, somebody saw the county judge jaywalk and they're mad about it. So, but every once in a while you get a good tip. The stuff with the guy who was running in Jonesboro, Chad Neal, mm-hmm. That one was a tip. With Mark Dar, you know, I had done a similar sort of investigation into Mark Martin before I shut the blog down. So then when I brought it back, it was kind of, well, let's just pick up where we left off. Got the credit card records, and then just on a whim one night, my wife and I started going through his campaign finance reports just to see, you know, I wonder. There were some questions that were raised with the credit card receipts, but nothing that was sort of the smoking gun, and it wasn't until you cross-referenced the two that it really jumped out at you. So the stories kind of come from everywhere, and half the time it's luck, I think.
Someone listening would say, okay, Mark Darr, Republican. You mentioned Mark Martin, Republican. You are, by admission, you would say lean left of center.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would definitely say I'm a liberal. I would definitely say I'm progressive. I don't know that I would say that I'm lockstep with the state Democratic Party.
Okay. But someone hears, okay, the people I've heard you talk about so far are Republicans. Do you turn a critical eye on anyone who's in the Democratic Party? Would you look
I
at
do. Okay. And actually, at the same time that I was doing the Mark Darr stuff, I requested all the same records from Charlie Daniels' office. Just on a whim of, you know, here's a guy who's been in various constitutional offices for decades. If I'm going to find something similar, it's probably going to be in an office like that. Nothing. I mean, there was nothing that even, you know, sort of raised suspicion. But then back in 2011, I did this whole series on the legislative reimbursements and how those were kind of being abused by representatives and senators. And that was kind of across the board. I mean, that wasn't partisan at all.
You're not traditional media, of course, and so I wonder if you have felt or heard any blowback from people who do trust or do use traditional media more than any other, like, well, you're still just, quote, just a blog. Do you get any of that?
I do get that, and that's almost one of those things where that tends to be the first time – well, actually, I heard that – 2 weeks ago out of Fort Smith with some stuff that I was doing there.
This is the series of stories you've done about the city attorneys that they've hired.
And
yes.
The city administrator's response is, well, you know, that's just a blog. That's not proof that anything has happened. And that tends to be sort of the last refuge of, well, let's not pay attention to what's going on there. And then generally I follow that up with some level of proof, and it doesn't matter that I'm just a blog. But in terms of blowback, not really, other than whoever tends to be the subject of what I'm looking at, you know, they do that. And you'll get some blowback on Twitter from, you know, representatives and stuff that want to try to make it partisan. You know, there are a couple that like to refer to me as a hate blogger, as if it's somehow hateful to point out that somebody else is stealing money. But
is that, though, make you have to be ever more conscious because, boy, a misstep or a wrong fact and, oh, there's the blog.
Yeah, I do kind of take pride in the fact that I'm not running anything that I can't document. I mean, there's, like I mentioned, you know, there are all these tips where, you know, there are all sorts of rumors floating around, but whether it's the overly careful lawyer in me coming out that doesn't want to run with something unless I can document it.
Because there could be consequences.
Exactly. You know, I don't want to get sued. And, or, you know, maybe it's just sort of the pride of, well, so far we're kind of batting 1,000. And every time I do this stuff, they can sort of buck all they want at the beginning. But in the end, it turns out that I was right. And I don't really want to risk that just to get out there and run first on a story.
Well, I was wondering if that was an advantage with the way Blue Hog Report is set up in that, okay, you don't have to have something every day. So, and there's not a you know, there's no risk of dead air. There's not a news hole in a newspaper to fill. It's like, well, if I don't have it yet, I can wait 3 more, 4 more, 5 more days.
Absolutely. Between work and family and stuff, or just, you know, writer's block or not having a lead, if there's not something there, I've kind of reached the point where I don't force it. Early on, I felt like I at least needed some filler, you know, every couple days to keep people reading. And now it's sort of become whatever it is. It's, you know, when I'm writing something, it's because I've done the legwork and it's become a story that I can document. And I think on some level, people appreciate that. You don't need to check every day to see what the minor stories are. It's sort of like, whoa, there's something new up. And, you know, the traffic comes in.
You mentioned you don't want to get sued, which makes you a member of the human race.
Right.
But there was one of your recent stories was about a state legislator. And you admitted on the first post about this that these were touchy things. It involved divorce. It involved some criminal, I don't know if they were ever charges, things like that. And this legislative candidate said, boy, he was going to sue. I mean, what was the process going through to make sure you did want to put this up? Sometimes teetering, maybe not on salacious, but
that was one where the first part of the story that I got was the abortion-related part of the story.
Right.
And my gut reaction to that was, I'm not touching that. That is between other people. And then contacted a few other people, and more stuff came out about him to the point where it became newsworthy that there was this track record of behavior.
That did not jibe with his public
exactly yeah.
pronouncements and stance.
Yeah, I mean, the campaign was sort of running on, you know, I'm this uber-conservative Christian family man, and none of his day-to-day activities fit that. So I went back and forth on it and then finally decided, okay, I'm going to write this, but I did the caveat because I wasn't worried about being sued. I mean, it was all documented. It was more just sort of that's kind of outside what I like to look into. I'm way more interested in the money trail and the legality of things. And other than some criminal charges that were later dropped, there wasn't any question of legality in that. And I wrote it in sort of my standard kind of tongue-in-cheek, bordering on sarcastic style at times, and then ran it by an old journalist that I really trust and said, what do you think about this? Should I run this at all? And he looked through it and he said, no, I think it's newsworthy, but here's where I'd tone it down a little bit, and I would just present it as facts and run with it that way. And I think that wound up making it a much better story in the end.
Of course, many reporters have editors and they'll chafe. Oh, I should run with that. You don't. I'm wondering if there is sometimes an advantage to that because you can decide what you're going to do and how long it will take. But do you sometimes think, oh, I'm out in this in a sea by myself and I do need another opinion?
Mm-hmm. My wife likes to refer to herself as my filter
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, I'm sure if I had my way and wasn't worried about her saying, oh, you went too far, there would be times that I'd put stuff in some of these posts that doesn't need to be there. So that's sort of the built-in in-house filter. But then on top of that, there are times where, especially before the first iteration of Blue Hog Report, so 2010 to 2011, we couldn't get any real mainstream news to pick it up. I mean, the best news coverage we got was when the state GOP tried to get me fired from the Supreme Court. Then the Democrat Gazette was interested in actually running stories, and it was 5 straight days of, look, we think Matt Campbell's a terrible person because of these things the state GOP told us. But since it's come back, I haven't had that sort of out on an island feeling near as much. The DAR stuff hit so quick and was, you know, picked up by the Democrat Gazette and the television, and I think that kind of gave us a little more credibility going forward. And like I said, everything that I've done has checked out. So at this point, I think if I put it out there, media at least looks at it and decides if it's something they want to touch on.
There have been some people who, through social media or whatever, said, oh, look at what, and they are happy with what you're doing. They say, the Blue Hog Report is doing what newspapers either A, used to do, or B, should always be doing. Is that fair? Do you agree with that?
I agree that it's something newspapers used to do. I don't think it's fair to skewer newspapers for not doing it now because the model has changed. And you're seeing newspapers that have been around for 150 years going out of business because, you know, the internet has changed how news is presented. And it's rare that you're going to find a newspaper that has the money and manpower to devote to, you know, this guy's our investigative journalist, and we let him spend 2 weeks researching something to do, you know, a serial stories.
Or something that's not a story at all.
Yeah. I mean, you
have to be willing to give.
That is definitely true. I've spent, you know, hours and days chasing down something only to find that it's not something worth writing about. I don't think it's really fair to hold that against newspapers. I think it's more of a sign or symptom of what the internet has done to traditional news media.
Do you make money? Does it make money?
The blog? No. I wish. One time in 2010, one person bought an ad on there for the month before the general election. But otherwise, it is entirely a labor of love and a tax on my own pocket. There's no money coming from it.
So how long do you think you'll do it?
I don't know. I enjoy doing it. And if, you know, when I get into a little bit of a rut, I'll put it aside. And there have been stretches even in the last year where, you know, I don't put anything up for 2.5 or 3 weeks because I don't feel like looking into anything, or I don't have the time. And on some level, it does serve as, if not advertisement for the law firm, at least advertisement for me as a person. And I've had clients who called me up because they heard about me because of the Mike Maggio stuff or the stuff with Mark Dar. So it definitely benefits me and the law firm. I'll do it till I get bored with it or until something comes up that makes it where I can't do it anymore.
Have you heard, do you know if there are any candidates out there who are thinking, you know what, I've got to be extra careful in this expense report because there's this guy down there in Central Arkansas who's looking through stuff? Do you think you've had that effect on?
I wish they would all think that. Yeah. The way the campaign contribution expense reports are set up, it's sort of this illusion of transparency anyway, other than the names of donors. I don't think it's asking too much to expect people to fill those out correctly and go ahead and give you, you know, addresses and actual dates and descriptions. At the same time, you still got 135 legislators and, six constitutional offices? So, and then, you know, the county stuff. So there's so many legislators and just politicians in general. My guess is if it's somebody who was going to sort of try to sneak something through anyway, they're not going to change just because I'm out there, because the odds are I'm not going to find them unless, well, like the Paul Bookouts thing, that wasn't my story at all. But Paul got caught because he had somebody in Jonesboro who severely disliked him and was checking everything he did. So if you're a politician who doesn't have this sort of local sworn enemy, then you can probably slide through unless you just really mess up and somebody notices.
But I would think, I don't know, I'm not in politics, but if you stay in long enough, and Paul Bookout had been in the state legislature for some time, you're probably going to make an enemy.
Yeah.
So is it ultimately good that there are these citizen journalists out there?
Oh, I think it's a great thing. In the same way that the internet might have changed how newspapers have to operate, I think it has created a different kind of news. I think you still have to sort of filter out the wheat from the chaff. And, you know, there are plenty of blogs, not so much Arkansas, but there are plenty of political blogs in other states that are just, you know, nothing but like a rumor mill. It's sort of like the Perez Hilton of politics for whatever state you're in. You know, it's just like, well, here's what I heard, or here's what somebody was doing at a restaurant last night. But if you get past that and you've got people who care enough to actually do a little legwork, it can be a great thing for news and for accountability and transparency.
Matt Campbell is the publisher of the Blue Hog Report. That's at thebluehogreport.com. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
How do hops, yeast, and malt come together to make your favorite brew? I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday when we pour over the science of beer with a few of Portland, Oregon's brewing experts. Plus, Portland's Reed College has the only nuclear reactor in the world run by undergraduates. We'll meet one of them on Science Friday from PRI.
Listen tomorrow from 1 to 3 p.m. to 91.3 FM.
Taking a turn down an unassuming road off of Highway 71B in Bentonville, the kind of street where the trees meet in the middle overhead, this turn will take you just a mile or so to Nancy Dallison's two-story home. Horses graze the grass in front as two Yorkies guard the front door. After offering me some organic black tea, Nancy takes me upstairs to one of two bedrooms she has converted into art studios, long after her children left them unoccupied. When she was a University of Arkansas art student, she took metalsmithing classes, but went off in different directions after school, even teaching art in the public schools for a few years. About 2 years ago, she took a class at the Eureka Springs School of the Arts, which rekindled her interest in metal. And after the class, she continued her research and self-education in the craft. At the moment, she works primarily with jewelry, because that's what sells, but would be interested in doing small sculptures, because there really is a lot you can do with metal.
Texture it, make the impressions with words, which is where I believe you saw my work. I texture with in other ways with screwdrivers, and I do some soldering. I do know some basic stone setting that I can, you know, apply to my metal work. I make bracelets and necklaces and earrings and just about a lot of things with metal.
She spends much of her time these days making jewelry to sell at craft shows and festivals and at two local boutiques, one in Fayetteville, one in Bentonville. She's moved quickly in her 2 years with the trade and credits the support of local shop owners and an abundance of time to do this work. Her real love is metal, though if she is burnt out after preparing a large order or for a festival, she will take a break and go to her other studio to paint. It takes her mind off of metalworking and lets her return with a fresh mind and new attitude. Falling back on her skills as a public school art teacher, Nancy now teaches a course on each at the Artist Retreat Center in Bella Vista and enjoys passing art on to others. But now she instructs adults.
I think I actually learn just as much from the students as hopefully they learn in class. I mean, it's just that whole coming together of ideas and the creative process.
Inside a vintage train case, she keeps her charms and stones and other small pieces. With the handle on top, she is able to pick the case up without the content shifting. Some charms she purchases already in the oval, round, or rectangular shape. Others she makes herself from a thin sheet of sterling silver.
And this is what I will cut out. I've been on a wing series lately, and so this is a little butterfly that I have sawn out with a jeweler's saw out of a flat sheet of sterling, and then I pierced out the openings and soldered the pieces together. I will set a little stone in this bezel cup.
The wing series has butterfly wings of various shapes and sizes, some with stones, some without. About a dozen or so items that come in earrings, bracelets, and necklaces. Nancy was inspired by the transformative nature of the butterfly. She says she is about done with the wings for now, but may revisit in the future. She has other works in progress around her workspace, a bracelet, a necklace. Though they are not just a bracelet or a necklace, Nancy puts thought into each piece.
The stone reminded me a lot of, it's a blue lace agate, and it reminded me a lot of water and of waves. So the fish is on the back, and the little dots are sort of representative of bubbles. So I get, sometimes I just start in on a piece and the ideas come as I'm working. A lot of times I have no plan.
I had found out about Nancy's specific work with words on metal. Charms and pieces with words stamped on them, like peace, love, happiness, or grace. So that is what we will make today. She begins with what she calls a blank, a flat charm or disc with nothing on it. Nancy does all of the texturing herself, using a hammer or other tool to give the piece a rugged look. She offered to make a charm for me. I couldn't come up with just one word I'd like to wear, so we went with a name that means a lot to me, Dexter, and went about brainstorming the rest of the piece.
As you can see from here, your letters can run
either
right, mm-hmm. vertically or horizontally. And then this is what it kind of looks like when it follows the shape mm-hmm. of the disc. Mm-hmm.
She shows me my charm options, and I choose a long and thin gold-colored piece and another fancier one to place in a hole at the other's bottom. It has three beads, one clear, the other two turquoise in color. After asking which font I would like, a typeset or a loopier one she calls fancy font, I choose the fancy. From a shelf on the opposite side of the narrow room, she removes the letter stamps. If you've ever used a typewriter, these stamps resemble the letters held in the rear of it, a three-dimensional letter on the end of a long and sturdy metal rod. She says they're relatively easy to find. She's purchased these from a local bead store, Hobby Lobby, and at Harbor Freight. She places a mouse pad under the charm. She says this is to diffuse the sound that imprinting the letters will make. She writes the letters D-E-X-T-E-R down on a sheet of white copy paper, referring back to it often, as she says she has learned the hard way that she needs to check and recheck the order of the letters. The 3-inch long skinny metal stamps that make each letter have an arrow drawn on them, pointing the direction they need to go to make each imprint.
And I try to kind of eyeball where my stamp is in relation to both sides of the metal It's not going to be a perfect stamping, of course, because it's not done by a machine. It's handmade. So if I get a little wonky, then it's okay. So here we go. Here's the R.
Couple of pounds.
Just a couple of blows, and you've got your first impression.
It doesn't take long to hammer out the six-letter word.
Almost finished here. Okay. Now you see how the metal's kind of warped a little bit? It's just from working the metal so much. But I can dig out this little plastic mallet and flatten that right back out.
To make the letters stand out on my charm, Nancy offers adding a bit of metal paint. I choose a patina color, and she rolls around the room in a desk chair to grab the appropriate tiny bottles and a brush.
And this is a nice, quick process. I'm just going to put out just a couple of different colors here of the patina for metal.
It doesn't take but a second to fill the grooves with paint and wipe off the excess with a paper towel. She then grabs a plastic case that holds jump rings in various sizes and metals. The brass disc, coupled with the silver beaded charm, is a mix of metals that Nancy says she likes, making the piece more interesting. So she chooses a silver for attaching to a chain of my choosing, and a brass to attach the beaded charm. I plan to take it home and add to a charm necklace of sorts, but she suggests a leather or silk cord.
Sometimes these little jump rings can be a little tricky to get all lined back up. And there we have it.
We're done.
So there you go.
Nancy herself wears a necklace with the word acceptance printed on it. She also likes the word grace, claiming to have none, though it is the meaning of her name. She takes inspiration from things she sees or reads, also offering the idea of printing a disc with the longitude and latitude of a special place. You may have noticed the sound of music behind her voice. She works with Pandora blaring from her MacBook, as this is a solitary activity and she gets lonely. Amos Lee is her favorite station. Her oldest Yorkie, Sammy, keeps her company as well. She thinks he's a bit deaf and the hammering doesn't bother him. Her younger pup steers clear of the studio while she's working. You can find Nancy Dallison's work on Facebook at InDesignsAR, or to take one of her classes, visit artistretreatcenter.com. If you have a story idea for the next installment of our Locally Made series or any other story idea, please send it to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Yesterday I got lost in the circus.
It is Thursday, June 19th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's time for, almost time, for the 70th annual Rodeo of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Yeah, it is.
Time flies.
So if you want to get a little rodeo history, the Fort Smith Museum of History is still celebrating the 80-year-old Old Fort Days Rodeo.
Fun.
With an exhibit called Ready to Rodeo. Apparently, part of the idea of a rodeo in Fort Smith was to convince lawmakers that we needed roads on this side of the state.
Really?
So they had a rodeo to get people to come there.
Now the Fort Smith Rodeo still has, from what I understand, one of the best barrel racing prizes in America.
Oh, it's still an amazing rodeo. Yeah. The first official rodeo was 1933 at Andrews Field Baseball Park, where the National Cemetery is now.
Uh-huh.
And it was the Arkansas-Oklahoma rodeo until 1977. The exhibit has information about Bob Cole, who was a great bull rider. He's in his 80s now. World champion calf roper Jerry Bob Hansen of Vian, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, a movie star came to the rodeo, so there are pictures of people like Ken Curtis, Pop quiz.
Ken Curtis was Festus?
On Gunsmoke. Very good. Michael Ancera?
Boy, I don't know.
Ooh, you stumped him.
I did. High five.
Who was that?
Well, he was on Star Trek, but that's not what this is about.
See, yeah, that, I don't know.
He played the Indian Cochise in the Broken Arrow series, and he was married to Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie, who accompanied him to Fort Smith.
There you go.
So there's a piece of trivia for you. And Denny Flynn, who is a 10-time National Finals Rodeo Bull Rider. All sorts of cool stuff so you can prepare. And this is open through the summer at the Fort Smith Museum of History on Rogers Avenue. It's $5 admission for adults and $2 for children. And then the Rodeo of the Ozarks kicks off this Saturday with Western Days.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue, pony rides, cowboy contests, and music by Alaska and Maddie and Backroad Anthem, who apparently are here all the time
they
now.
They do not sleep.
Gates open at 4 o'clock Saturday at Parsons Stadium in Springdale. And I think it's $5 for the barbecue and $5 for the concert. So put $10 in your pocket. And
there you go.
Go to rodeooftheozarks.org.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Christopher Kimball from America's Test Kitchen. This week on our show, I interview Ivan Orkin. He's chef owner of Ivan Ramen Shops in both Tokyo and New York. This week's recipe challenge is how to make the world's fluffiest omelet. And I talked to our wine expert to understand what makes a Cote de Rome a Cote de Rome. Join us this week for America's Test Kitchen from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
That's Saturday at noon on 91.3 FM.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Beech Grove.
Beech Grove.
It's on the northeast corner of Crawford County, almost to Franklin County.
What is there a beach there?
I mean, maybe there's like a creek beach or something.
Can you have a beach for a creek? You can have a riparian zone.
Maybe.
You can have a shore, bank.
Yeah.
There's probably a grove there, or was at one point.
Probably.
All right.
Maybe beach trees.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there
of
you
course.
Go.
There you go.
Is it spelled? Right. And that's spelled the same way, right?
No.
No.
No. Okay,
right.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See what happens when you have a conversation, mm-hmm. You figure stuff out. Want to remind everybody that I will be the MC tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Town Center for Summer Salsa. It's a fundraiser for Children's House in Springdale that serves children who have been abused and neglected throughout the two counties, Benton and Washington County. That's tomorrow night at the Town Center. I've done this for a few years. I look forward to it. Tonight, also at the Town Center, is the Single Parent Scholarship annual fundraiser. Sold out. Congratulations to them.
Okay, good job.
Very good for them.
Good
Tuesday night, I went to the Mojitos and Moonflowers.
At Botanical Garden of the Ozarks.
Yes. Very nice night. Very good time.
Lots of fundraisers.
Lots of things going mm-hmm. on. Yes.
Yeah. Another reminder that we have a giveaway today.
Yes.
Four tickets to any Malco movie.
Anywhere in the listening area.
Four tickets to a Naturals baseball game.
Which they're vouchers. You go to Will Call. You mm-hmm. turn them in. They give you the best seats available for that day or night game.
And two tickets to any opera in the Ozarks, which takes place at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs.
They're opening night at tomorrow night. They also have some performances at Aaron's Art Center in Bentonville
throughout
this season. You pick which performance and which day. So it could be Puccini. It could be Mozart. It could be Sondheim. We'll have a report tomorrow on this 64th season, which has all sorts of neat elements to it. They've been doing their ceremonial ribbon cuttings throughout Northwest Arkansas this week.
Oh, cool. I know. I'm going in a couple of weeks to see the Sondheim one with my mom.
Into the Woods.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that work?
Not really. No.
It's very interesting.
So I'll become familiar.
I mean that in a good way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
We will end today's show with some music from Pete Stein. He is a singer-songwriter from Colorado, and he'll be performing at Smoke and Barrel tomorrow evening during happy hour, so early on in the evening. For more information, you can go to smokeandbarrel.com or PeteSteinMusic.com. This is Pete Stein's song, Wounded Pride. Thanks so much for listening, and have a good Thursday. Dying and defeat.
He rushed west to Colorado in the spring of 65. His unborn baby daughter in the belly of his bride. And he slumped some in the saddle for the aching in his side. Or was that just a symptom of his foolish, wounded pride? Yeah, he was gonna strike it rich, all right. She begged him not to go, not to leave her alone.
He did not heed her cries for the siren of that gold.